From a distance, the world looks blue and green, and the snow-capped mountains white. From a distance, the ocean meets the stream, and the eagle takes to flight. It's the voice of every man. From a distance, we all have enough, and no one is in need. And there are no guns, no bombs, and no
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth, and we are continuing our conversation with Deacon Rod Walker. We're thrilled that he came in today. He recently was ordained as a deacon with the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis, and we're so happy that he came in to talk with us. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Wonderful. So, Rod, we were talking a little bit earlier, and we were talking about your call to ministry, and that goes back many, many years.
Many, many years. So yeah, back to the Renew program. So about 1985-ish, I was about 25-ish. And by that time, I'd, you know, got to know the pastor, and Annette did as well. And I was meeting with the pastor, and he said to me, he goes, "You know what, Rod, you'll make a good deacon someday, but not yet." I didn't even know what that meant. And I was like, well, okay, you know, whatever. You know, we hadn't even started to have a family yet or anything, you know, and I was 25 years old. And so I filed it, you know, and then we ended up moving to Bloomington a couple years later. And over time, I got involved with a neighborhood ministry program there. And so I got to know the pastor there, and I was about 35-ish. And the pastor there said, "You know what, Rod, you'll make a good deacon someday, but not yet." And I'm like,
That you've heard that before.
I thought, yeah, I've heard that exact. It was the exact phrase. I remember going, "Oh, okay. Well, but not yet. So, okay, I can file that." And I just, you know, did. And, you know, I'd think about it, pray about it once in a while, going, I don't really know what that even means in my life, but that's okay.
Had you met other deacons by that time?
You know, at St. Richard's in Richfield, they had an active deacon. So I was starting to kind of get an idea of what a deacon was. In Prior Lake, they did not have one, so I had no idea what that really even meant. So then we moved to Hastings and started working on the building committee here. And then Father Jim Perkle came and started working with him directly on the building committee. And then I was about 45-ish, and Father Jim said, "You know what, Rod, you'll make a good deacon someday, but not yet." And I was like,
"He did not say
yes,
that.
He did. Yes, he did. He did." And I said, "Okay, we need to talk about this." And so then we started talking about that, and, you know, and it wasn't time. No, not yet. You know, it wasn't time. I sensed it wasn't time. I still didn't really know what it all meant, but I said, "You know what? I'm going to start really trying to seek God and see what this means in my life." And so a few more years went past, and life was busy, and that's how it goes sometimes. And then 2014, Father Jim was, I think that's when he was moving on. And I said, "You know what, Father Jim, we need to chat about this a little bit." So we did. And we said, you know, he said, let's just start going down the path of applying and understanding a little more. And
because what is that whole process, please?
It's a very in-depth process. So the first year is the application process. So there's different phases of like physical application. There's a lot of information that goes in there. You basically reveal your entire life, I think is the best way to put that, which is a very good thing. It's full disclosure on anything and everything. And they have a few periods of time in the year where they sit down and review that with an applicant. And then they'll also have a discernment weekend where they'll have deacons and deacon candidates and their wives come in and talk more about it, you know, and get more information. So it's really kind of information gathering for on both sides. And then after that first year of application, they decide if you're going to move on. And if you move on, you become an aspirant, meaning you're aspiring to become a deacon. So that's year one is aspirancy. And then wives also attend class with the deacon candidates, deacon aspirants at that point.
So it was a commitment for your wife as well.
Absolutely, commitment for wives, yep. And
were all your other classmates married?
In my class, yes. In the class that's behind me, they have... So in my class, there were 10 of us. All 10 of us were married. In the class that's going to be ordained in 2021, 2 years behind me, 7 in the group, and I think 2 are single today. So it depends, and it's fine either way. But if you are married, your wife is absolutely required to be part of formation throughout the aspirancy year for sure. And then they can stay and participate in whatever parts they'd like to after that continues for the next 4 years. So we go to school for another 4 years, four, depends. But and some wives are more involved with that than others. And Annette chose not to get directly involved with every class. But then the wives also, then they break off and have their own formation once a month that they go to for the next, until we are ordained, until we get to that point. So, and the wives have full control. What I mean by that is I could be right up to the last day thinking God's calling me to be ordained, and if my wife disagrees with that, it's all done. I will not be ordained. Deacons will not be ordained unless their wife is 100% in agreement and feels that it's God's call. And it's not Rod's call. Rod thinks this is a great thing to do, or my wife Annette does. No, it's part of the process as we work through that, through formation for that 4.5 years, discerning whether this is God's call or not.
And what's the difference, please?
The difference is...
How do you discern that?
Well, you discern that through learning how to deeply communicate with God, deeper than I was when I started. I don't know if that's the right way to explain that, but there's a growth in prayer. And what I mean by that, it's spending time with the Lord and learning how to communicate with God in some way. And each individual person is going to have a totally different way of that happening, I believe. But, you know, through the tragedies of life, through the joys of life, just stepping aside and saying, okay, God, help me understand for me, what did you want me to get from that? You know, and that's not easy to do because we get very, very busy, and days and weeks can go by sometimes. So as part of formation, we're always trying, we're striving to deepen our prayer life. As a deacon, we pray the breviary as a priest does, which is a morning and evening prayer. It's a requirement once you're ordained. But as in formation, we're encouraged to start that practice. And thanks be to God, that is that practice through other prayers helps a deacon to understand, is this a call or not? My good friend Chris, who sat next to me for 3 years at year, going into year four, he said, you know what, I just don't think God's calling me this way. And Chris was a great guy and certainly would have made a great deacon. But through that prayer process, he was able to discern. It's like, you know what, I don't think he's calling me to do this. There's other things I think he wants me to do.
How brave of him.
Very brave of him. Yep. Yep, it was. And we were all a little surprised, to be honest with you. But yeah, so he had developed that communications with God in his heart to the point where it's like he was very, very much at peace with that. And he was with us at ordination, and it was wonderful.
So tell us a little bit about ordination, and then you are assigned to St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Church, which Correct. Is kind of unusual, isn't it?
Yep, it's unusual in that the practice has been in the past for new deacons to typically be assigned outside their home parish. There are good reasons for that. The best way I can explain this is that when we are ordained, basically we need to die to ourselves. So the Rod Walker that would have been known at C's at the parish prior has died to himself. And if we had more time to talk about that, I could explain that a little deeper. But that's part of the process of formation. It's like through some grace of God, I'm able to discern that the old me is gone, and God is calling me to be this new person, a deacon. And in that diaconate service, then I am different than I was as Rod, the parishioner who sat in the third pew to the left with his family. And now I'm serving at the altar and things like that. So typically that can be a hard transition for a parish sometimes, and then also for the deacon.
Yes.
Archbishop Hebda is in our archdiocese makes the final call on assignments. And historically, deacons would not be assigned in their home parishes, but in this class of 10 of us, he decided that four of us would be. I think he's seen there is some advantage to knowing the community, and you can kind of jump in and actually start kind of moving a little quicker versus you have to take, you know, the time to learn the community. So there are definitely advantages and there are some challenges, but I'm open to, you know, God sent me here for God's purpose, and so I'll continue to work through that.
Does a church, a parish, ask to have a deacon, or how does that work?
Some do, and certainly as the diaconate has become more prevalent in this archdiocese over the last 30 years. And again, things in the church move pretty slow, right? So we're talking slow progression. So I guess I should explain something too. So the diaconate was originally formed back in Acts chapter 6, and it was very active in the early church. And in about the year 6, 7, 800, it started kind of tapering off. And I think a lot of that had to do with political reasons within the church. And then it was kind of gone off the radar until Vatican II. And then it was reinstituted as part of Vatican II. So in the 70s, started small, grew in the 80s small, 90s a little bigger. So really, it's really just starting to hit its stride. Kind of the modern diaconate just celebrated its 50th anniversary, if you will. And so in 50 years, it's a growing gift that God has given to the church, and it will continue to grow. And it's really exciting to be part of that whole experience.
What are you looking the most forward to?
I think what I'm looking the most forward to is getting to know people in the parish from a different perspective, right? And actually getting to sit with them and be part of their journey, their faith journeys, help them to grow closer to God, help them to encounter Christ in everything they do, and especially in those kind of tragic times, because Christ does not abandon us, but it sure feels like it sometimes. If I can help people see that Christ is right there with them, that's what I feel I'm called to do. And we'll see how that all gets put together. I don't know, but I'll just trust God that's what He's calling me to do.
So do you have specific duties?
Yeah, and actually, so there's parish ministry, and then there will also be secondary ministry that deacons have. And so we were notified of our second ministry, but we won't start that till July. So I will be in prison ministry.
Wonderful, because you have experience in that.
Yep, I've done some intern work, as we all do throughout formation. We have a summer in nursing homes hospital. We have a summer in prison ministry, and we have a summer working with Catholic Charities. And so there's like these periods of time where we're hands-on doing those kinds of ministries. So yeah, no, I'm very excited to begin the prison ministry. I felt that the men that I met with, and it was at Washington County Jail in Stillwater, without exception, the men I met with during the summer were all very much trying their best to make their lives better. And they had an understanding that growing in a relationship with Christ was going to help them get there. And I thought that was just so encouraging for me. They're taking that very seriously. And so they need help. That's not something you do on your own, really. You know, Christianity is a community affair. And so, you know, they need help and they need community around them to help that happen. It was rewarding to be part of that. So
you're going to do that on an ongoing basis also?
Yep. So that'll start in July. And then so it'll be prison ministry and then parish work. And then in the parish, that kind of gets defined as time goes. So I'm ordained as a priest is. I can do most things a priest does, but not all. But I'm ordained to baptize, to marry, and to funeral, things like that. Deacons do not consecrate the Eucharist, and deacons do not hear confession. Other than that, it's pretty much similar, very similar to what a priest can do. So that's why we become like the kind of the working hands and feet of a parish, and the priest to help them do some of the things that then can free them up to do those other things sometimes too.
Rod, I know that you are married to Annette. You guys, yeah. You have been married a long time. You have two wonderful boys. What is your thought on married priests?
Well, you know, and I come from a Presbyterian yes. background where ministers are married. You know, I've wrestled that around in my head over the decades a lot. And then I think as I've been through formation, I've kind of answered the question in my head and my heart. Certainly, there were periods of in the church where priests were married, Catholic priests were married. That hasn't happened in about 1,000 years, probably. I don't know the exact timing on that. But, you know, I under the existing circumstances, I think it would be very, very difficult for a priest to be married and be able to split his time between family and the parish. Now, I can do that as a deacon because I'm in a different role. Deacons are volunteers. I'm not a full-time staff person at the church. I could end up being sort of in an on-call situation for hospitals and things like that. But time that a priest needs, a pastor especially, to manage that parish, it just doesn't seem feasible to me to also be able to split that with a family and be a good father to the family. Now, a priest is certainly a father to that parish, and thanks be to God for that. But I don't know. I mean, you know, what would Pope Francis say? Well, I don't know, you know.
Well, certainly the Amazon is, they're looking at married priests there.
Yeah, but that's for a specific reason. Mm-hmm. You know, they have
A shortage,
and they have a cultural thing that's different than here. So, you know, the church has wisdom in that it looks at things and says, you know what? And especially with Pope Francis, take a look at that. Let's look at that deeper. And that's one of the things I love about Pope Francis. I also love Benedict, and I love John Paul too. They all had their gifts, you know, and they're very different in their gifts. And God brought Pope Francis to us at this time, I think, for a purpose, and it's something we needed. We had great theologians out of John Paul II and Benedict. It's like, okay, now let's try something. Let's add to that.
New.
Let's add to the recipe here,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you have that foundation, people. Two popes gave you a great foundation. If you would look at it and spend some time with it, there's the foundation. Now let's put some icing on the cake, and that's called love. That's where I think that goes. So, and you know, that's something I just would recommend people take to prayer. Just ask, you know, God, hey, put my heart at peace with this one way or the other. And, you know, and the thing is, we need to understand, you know, because Deacon Rod thinks there should or shouldn't be, that's not going to change anything. You know what I mean? There are decisions that are made by authorities that are in that position to make those decisions. And I'm, as a deacon, I'm not here to question the authority. I'm here to simply help people have encounters with Christ. For my ministry, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to let that sit. I just want to help people see Christ in their lives.
How have you changed, Rod?
Well, I would say this. I probably was a natural-born worrywart. My mother was, for sure. I learned that maybe from her. But no, I think we were both born that way. And I think that's something, I think God gives us all a particular challenge. And a lot of my brother deacon candidates, we had virtue struggle of hope. They work with us, and we kind of develop what that is. And that's very common, I think, with men. It certainly wasn't our group of 10. 9 of us had that virtue struggle. So,
what does that struggle mean to you?
It's basically thinking we have to solve everything ourselves. I'm a man. I got to figure this out. When I lost my jobs, I got to figure this out. When I had my accident, I got to figure this out. And it's like, that's our natural tendency,
right?
We got to fix it. We're fixers. That's what men do. That's what we're told to do. And then at some point, I guess for me, God kept sort of repeating the message. Look, here's a situation. How do you think you're going to fix this, Rod? I'm like, I don't think I can. You are correct. You cannot. I can. Let me. Trust me. The key word there is trust. And to let go and to trust God to that level is very, very difficult. It was for me. And I'm sure there are moments where I still will struggle with that. But I've learned how to at least start having that conversation with Christ. I mean, there are times in my heart where I can just see him smile.
How beautiful.
It's about time you gave that up.
Well, you are making our listeners smile. Rod, we couldn't be happier for you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for coming in today and chatting with us. We want to thank our guest, Deacon Rod Walker. It's just really been a wonderful thing for us to watch your journey as well.
Well, thank you very much.
So congratulations to you. God bless you.
And thank you.
Greet your wonderful family.
I will.
Excellent.
Thank you. All right.
And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7. KDWA in Hastings.
From a distance, the world looks blue and green, and the snow-capped mountains white. From a distance,